Coming up on this episode of Riverbank Riches, Navigating Financial Wisdom. You know, we talk all the time about customization when it comes to financial planning. It's key, right? There's not a one-size-fits-all solution. But there are some certain truths that everyone should follow when it comes to retirement planning. So today, we're going to lay out the first five in a two-part series on these universal retirement truths, explain why everyone should be accounting for these in retirement, and then how you approach these on your own individual terms for each one of these. So we've got a good show coming up. Stay tuned. Well, glad to have you back on the show, Ben George, alongside Desmond Taylor, CLC Financial Services. Desmond, what's going on today?
Lots going on. Lots going on. It's getting close to the end of the year. Starts to pick up, and it's good. Good times.
Well, I know you told me you were working on some seminars. I know this is I know you're very active in the community. Is a big part of what you do is hosting financial education classes, hosting workshops at local colleges and universities. Anything you have coming up that maybe somebody can be on the lookout for, or is it just, hey, check out the website, we'll have more information coming up?
Yeah, I'd say check out the website. We're finalizing some dates for some workshops. It's been a little while since we've done the workshops. I think the last one we did was May or June. But those are coming up. We're getting some spaces put together. FSU, which we're really happy. We've worked with them in the past. A couple of capstone projects. Actually, we've helped the MBA students. We've hosted a few of the capstone projects. And those capstone projects really help us as a business. The students come in there and show us, hey, what are your weaknesses? What are your opportunities? They do like a SWOT analysis for those who had a business or went through the business programs, and give us a good kind of inside look or outside look on, you know, what can we do better to make our business better, which we always appreciate. So we've helped them. We're also looking to use a space there to do a workshop. It's at the Hub. It's a part of FSU, but it's part of their business development program, and we're really looking forward to that. So getting some dates put together, and of course we'll be holding some at Methodist, where we've always traditionally held some workshops at. So yeah, look forward to those, and just check out the website to stay posted. We'll have some mailers going out too to people.
Awesome. CLCfinancial.com is the website. You can also call if you want to do that at 910-323-5700. We're going to talk in just a little bit about the universal retirement truths, but I want to get a getting to know you question out there for you, Desmond. So we're going to do this from time to time where we ask Desmond a little question away from the office, right, to learn more about what he's doing outside of work and when he's not picking pecans, right? So this week's question, Desmond, I know you don't have a ton of time with your busy schedule, the work that you do, but when you do have time to carve out for TV, what's the last show that you binged?
So, you know, when I go home, sometimes I just like when I'm not doing, I'm just unplugging. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. When you get home, you're just like, man, what's some of the, like, how can I just disconnect from everything? So, Justine and I will, I think the last show that we've kind of been watched was like Selling Sunset or Selling the OC. I can't remember. She got me on those. And, you know, the first couple episodes was fun because it was like real estate and they were, you know, but then it almost seems like it got where most shows go, which is down into the drama. So I was hooked on from the beginning of it because I'm like, oh, cool, you know, these real estate multi-million dollar houses out there in California. And then the drama aspect come in and I'm like, of course, the drama's always got that hook at the end of it. And you're like, and so that's the last shows that that I guess we have been binged watched. And she always gets me on something like that.
That's funny. Have you seen all those yet? Or are you still?
Yes, so we've seen. No, we've seen them all. She actually finished, I think the last one, it was either Selling Sunset or Selling the OC, only had 8 episodes in it. And she was, she got to the last episode and she was like all sad. She's like, oh no, you know, the next one doesn't come out till next year. And she looks over at me and I'm like holding it in and I'm like sad a little bit. It's like, because it leaves you on a cliffhanger there. So it was
we were talking a little bit before the show. We have some similar TV tastes. Selling Sunset's one of them too. And I'm not going to take everybody down this wormhole, because if you don't watch it, you probably don't care. But I'm with you. Like, I enjoy the real estate TV shows, right? That's a very popular genre, because you want to see these homes, go inside the home, see the price tags, hear the negotiations. But it has morphed into just like a relationship drama show with like a little bit of real estate sprinkled in. So like I'm kind of leaving the show a little bit, because it's less about seeing the homes around California, LA area, and that sort of thing. So I'm with you. Like, it's a little bit too much drama. Like, I'll go watch a drama show if I want the relationship stuff. Like, I want a little bit more real estate.
Yeah, and I see Jason less and less. You know, him and his brother are kind of the one. And it's like I see them less and less, and I see, you know, these other, and there's just nothing but drama. So it's But still, you know, it's funny to watch it. I think it's overinflated, though. You know, they got to make a show. So,
no, absolutely. Well, we're glad you're here on the show. If you haven't, please subscribe the video podcast. You can watch it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. So wherever you listen and watch, please hit subscribe there and check out the video side of things. You might just be used to just listening to your podcast, but we do a good job on the video side of things and really proud of the show we put out every week. And you can watch it right there in your phone. It's a pretty cool feature that a lot of these podcasting services have just rolled out recently. So if you haven't checked it out, make sure you check out the video side of things as well. Plus, find us on Facebook, LinkedIn as well. You'll find Desmond, follow him there, and you can get some content from the show there as well. Now, we want to talk today about the Universal Retirement Truths. And as I talked about earlier, it's going to be a two-part series. So we got 10 different truths that we want to break down. We'll do 5 in this episode. We'll do 5 in the next. So you don't have to watch the first one to see the second and vice versa. But we do want to go through each of these because we talked about retirement planning. It's not a one-size-fits-all, right? When you go into work with CLC Financial, you're going to customize your plan, find out what works for you, what doesn't work for you, and build towards your goals and what you want your future to look like. But there are some things that are true from person to person in retirement, things that you have to be paying attention to, Desmond. So I want to start off with one that I think maybe number one on the list when you're talking about, okay, if you're talking about retirement planning, what's the first thing you need to do? And that's everybody needs an income plan, right?
Everybody needs an income plan. I think that, you know, there's too many people that have a goal that's set on the number you need to get to retirement. I think I've said this in previous episodes, is everybody has this number they need to get to, right? You know, you're told your whole life, you know, save, get to this number for retirement, build your nest egg. And then you get to that point and you go, okay, how do I generate income from this? And that's really important, right? How to generate income from it, because it's not just drawing down from that number or your assets that you have. It's how do you efficiently take income from it? Somebody that has, you know, $500,000 in traditional assets can pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes just by drawing it the wrong way. It also affects, you know, if you have beneficiaries, how much of that do you want to leave to your beneficiaries and the tax efficiency of all of that. Typically, when you're younger, if you have children, you get to take deductions off of claiming them on your taxes, and then you get your house that you get to deduct. But now, all of a sudden, you're spending more because you're retiring. You're not going to work every day. And then what happens if one of, if you're, you know, both married, and then there's one spouse left, because as you get older age, you know, typically the man or somebody would die first in the relationship, and now you're left with one income, and you're also left an individual tax filer instead of a married filing jointly. So all of these can drain a retirement, especially as medical expenses go up. So having an income plan that's set from the beginning, so that you don't deplete your assets and you have a way of replenishing them as you spend them, or if one spouse or partner passes, then the spouse or partner that's left will have a way to continue their life, quality of life. Maybe they have to go into some type of long-term care. One of them's not there to help each other, you know, take care of the other one at home, and they have to go into a long-term care facility, and that cost. So you need to make sure that whenever you're planning for your retirement or getting close to retirement, that you start thinking about, okay, outside of the number that I have, how am I going to efficiently draw income off this? Do I need to do Roth conversions, which follow a 5-year timeline? You can't put money that you put into or convert over to Roth. Has to be in there for 5 years before you can pull it out. You have to file the paperwork, make sure it's all put in with the IRS, because, you know, they're going to have their guidelines. How much do I need to put into a Roth? If I need to put anything into a Roth, how much do I need to move into some type of fixed income? With the interest rates being good right now, there's a lot of great tools and vehicles that you can use to get some guaranteed income. Having an income plan and a solid income plan, not just, you know, drawing and sketching out on a piece of paper how you're going to take income, is really important. And so for our clients, you know, that's what we do, and that's what we focus on. You know, really, when you're in your accumulation years, you need to be in an S&P fund. There's not too much magic that can happen, right? Just be in an S&P fund, be in a growth fund. But all that magic starts to happen about, like, one of the episodes we talked about, which is 10 years prior to retirement, because we have to position your assets for income. And you can pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes. And, you know, then when you pass, you have an individual tax filer, and then, you know, eventually those assets would go to your children. And then if they're in traditional IRA assets, they have to be spent down in 10 years and they have to pay taxes on them. So people, I think, don't understand the complexities around generating income. And, you know, they get to the number, they think, maybe I'll just take interest off of the dividends that the stocks pay me. But then they don't think, hey, these dividends are taxed at ordinary income. Whereas if I had these positions some other way, then maybe I could only be taxed at capital gains, and capital gains is taxed at a lot lower rate. So it's really important to think this through and to just, you know, sketch it out yourself, or you know, go to an advisor that is like, hey, you know, you should just take it from here, or you should start Social Security at, you know, that's another thing that we got to talk about is, you know, Social Security. If somebody just says, hey, you should start Social Security at 62 because I think the Social Security Administration's going bankrupt, then they didn't show you any math behind it. Yeah, don't do that. Or if they say, hey, you know, you should take Social Security at age 70 because that's the latest you can file without doing any calculations. Well, don't do that either, because then you could be, you know, when you turn age 70, you do get a true 8% increase every year on Social Security, but maybe you could have delayed that, taken out money from traditional IRA assets, depleted that, because then you'll have RMDs at age 73 or 75 that you'll have to take out, and you don't want to have maximum RMDs, Social Security all coming in at the same at one time, because that's great, you have a lot of income, but you have excessive income that you're just paying high taxes on that you won't have for later, or won't be able to just your beneficiaries.
Yeah, if some people might just be a pension and Social Security is my income and I'm good to go. It's getting rarer and rarer, but as you can tell, there's a lot more sophistication that goes into income planning for a lot of folks. So you know, bottom line is, no matter what your income's going to look like, you want to make sure you have a plan for it. So that's the first truth. All right, truth number two, long-term care. We don't want to talk about it. Many people don't want to think ahead that far. Maybe people don't feel like they're going to need it necessarily, or they feel like they're going to be able to take care of themselves, but no matter what, the truth here and the thing that needs to be addressed is you need to have a plan for how you're going to address those long-term care issues should they pop up.
We force our clients to think about long-term care, and I know that sounds terrible, but we really do. I think it's a good thing. It's a positive thing. You need to think about long-term care. If you look at, if you go on I believe it's SSA.gov. If you go on there, it tells you that 70 people over 65, 70% of them will need some form of long-term care. Now, it does say some form of long-term care. That's long-term care is a broad word, broad term. You know, who needs it, how much you need it. How many of your ADLs or living activities can you perform every day? Things like that determine how much long-term care you need. But in our mind map that we do with clients, we always, you know, try to put up there and in the concerns area is long-term care. Now, I do also tell people that I do not like long-term care insurance, and that may make some people mad, but I'm not here to make everybody happy. The long-term care insurance is usually incredibly expensive. It's around, you know, it can be $10,000 for each person a year. And then after 10 years, you've both put in $100,000 each, $200,000, and you have nothing to show for it, similar to term insurance. So it's not extremely efficient for retirement when you can take, you know, that same amount of money, put it away somewhere else, and then it could grow. And then at the end of 10 years, if you need long-term care, great, you could take it. If you don't, then you've got all your money back plus interest. So there's a ton of different vehicles. You know, even there's some life insurance policies. Traditionally, people think of life insurance as I have to die to get to let on that life insurance. Well, there's been such a need for long-term care planning that some of these that some insurance companies, many that we represent, have in there what's called living benefits. And these living benefits allow you to trigger these if you can't perform or do certain things that will help supplement your long-term care or can help supplement your long-term care. Now, of course, they're not only for long-term care. We've had people use them who have had cancer in the past, and they can go get some treatments and things like that. But there's a ton of different ways that can help supplement long-term care. It's something that you need to think about. Everybody, you know, at least one out of two of you will probably need some form of long-term care. Even if you have children, and we get this a lot, client says, well, you know, I have the children take care of me. Well, you know, great. Is your child, do they not have a family? You know, do they not have anybody that they have to support? Because if they have to come back and support you, who's going to take care of their family? You know, if you have a daughter who has young children and you go in long-term care, well, you know, you're going to be kind of, I don't want to say a drain, but you know, if somebody who gets in advanced stages of long-term care can be really hard to deal with sometimes and take care of, and you don't want to put that hardship on your family. And if you do, you want to make sure that you're able to. We've even have clients that, you know, their family members will take care of them, but instead of paying somebody else, they'll pay, you know, their child. And some people think, well, you know, pay my child, but they're not working anymore and they have a family to take care of. So this is a way, you know, they're going to take, of course, your children will take better care of you than somebody else. So, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to be able to take care of your children while they're taking care of you. And it makes things run smoothly. So long-term care is, you know, just, I'm gonna put it up there with the income plan. You need it.
Yeah. There's, as you can tell, different ways to go about it. different options in order to take care of it and to plan for it. But bottom line is you need to be thinking about it, and CLC Financial will make you if you haven't thought about it yet.
Yeah.
So it's important, that important. All right, next retirement truth. Let's go to the stock market. I know that you enjoy the stock market. That's kind of how you got your start, just paying attention and just being interested and curious about things there. Well, what you know, and everybody should know, is that the truth is that no one can consistently time the stock market, right? I mean, there might be people that say, oh, well, remember 2008? I knew that was coming. I got out ahead of time, and I didn't suffer any of those big losses. Or even 2020, right, when COVID hit. Like, oh, I knew that was coming. But the chance of them getting it right the second time, or even getting back in at the right time, right? So you got to do it on both sides. But just the bottom line is the timing is just incredibly difficult, and you can't plan around that.
Yeah, you don't have that type of flexibility in your retirement to sit there and play the stock market. I mean, maybe some people do with a smaller amount of money, but you can't start betting your whole retirement on the fact that you can time the stock market, because if you get it wrong once, you're done. And people are living longer too, so you got to make sure that you're able to stretch these assets out for, you know, the length of you. And then you can't only think about yourself. Husbands out there sometimes, you know, they think about themselves. You also have to think and make sure that you're taking care of your wife. And once, you know, us guys, I say that we, you know, tend to want to die first, but us guys that pass first, we have to make sure that our spouses and our families taken care of if something happens to us. So, you know, sitting there and playing the stock market is not a good way to do this. And I would say too, that most people don't even understand the stock market. You know, it's not a casual thing to sit there and play the stock market. There's different, even if you're just saying, well, I'm just doing indices, you know, I'm doing ETFs or I'm doing mutual funds. You know, there's different types of ETFs. I'll use, for example, last year, the NASDAQ 100. The NASDAQ 100 is the way it's weighted is, you know, the different companies that are in it, depending on their market cap, have different weights. Well, there's also an equally weighted NASDAQ 100. Well, the equally weighted NASDAQ 100 actually went down 5% last year, whereas the traditional NASDAQ 100 was flat last year. So unless you're sitting there, you know, studying all this, making sure that you're even, you know, you go and you click a trade button on your E-Trade or your, you know, Fidelity or whatever account, and you just see NASDAQ 100 or equally weighted NASDAQ 100, and you're sitting there thinking, okay, well, what's the difference? I'm just going to, you know, trade one. Well, that, you know, if you have $1 million in retirement, then you just lost $50,000 last year because you didn't understand the how the index was weighted. So you have to be really careful, and jumping in and out of the market and trying to time and do it in your retirement years, you're kind of, you know, you need to be over and done with that. Again, some people like to bet, you know, I tend to be on the risk-taking side, but you need to quantify your risk in the sense of how much risk can I take? You know, if you want to go out and take some money and throw it in, you know, use it and bet in the stock market or go out to Vegas with it, you can do that. Just make sure that you have enough stuffed away so that you can guarantee your retirement for not just you, but your family as well.
We're talking about universal retirement truths here on Riverbank Riches. Again, if you want to get in touch with Desmond, I have a question for him, or anything we touch on today, if you haven't actually addressed these within your plan, you can always reach out, clcfinancial.com or 910-323-5700. The next one is longevity. So the bottom line is, for anybody that's going into retirement, you don't want to outlive your money, right? So mm-hmm. You think about how long you're going to live, and obviously we don't know, right? So if we did know, it'd be much, much easier to do the planning. But it's even hard to even kind of trace or try to guess on how long you'll live based on your ancestors, because medicine's gotten so much better and we're living longer and longer. So this is something you have to really take into account, because, A, we don't know how long we're going to live, but also you got to make sure you're ready for a long retirement.
Yeah, I think, was it 23andMe that allows you to do that test where you can see the gene test?
I think
test?
So, yeah.
Yeah, you can right. do your gene test and figure out, you know, what traits you have and such like that. So you even have things like that now where you can do it and you can be like, okay, well, I'm more susceptible to this, so I should stay away from this, or I should do this. Right. So people are living longer and longer. I think it'll be scary in the future, you know, how long people are going to live. What's that movie? Ben, maybe you know what it is, where the two ladies took that potion. I always forget the name of this, and they live forever, but their body still ages. And I think the movie ends with them like walking down steps, and like their body just like falls apart. Wow. So it's, you know, figuring out how long you're going to live. Whenever we have the conversations with clients about Social Security is one of them, and you know, they say, well, when should I start Social Security? Which we calculate mathematically when you should start. You know, a lot of people are shocked that you can actually calculate with using, you know, mathematically about when I should take Social Security, but it's actually, you know, I would say fairly complex and fairly easy at the same time. The complex part comes in of, you know, when they're going to die, which you don't know. So we ask people, you know, if you know when you're going to die, well, we can tell you all the answers for everything, but nobody knows. So we just have to, you know, and if you go on the chart that says how people long will live or how long people will live, it's the average life expectancy table that they use. And I believe for men, it's around 84, 85. But what people don't realize is every year that they live longer and longer on that chart. Take an example for the SSA.gov has a the actuarial life table on it. And you can see there that if you go to like age one, it says life expectancy 73. Now, this chart, I'm sure, is a little bit out of date, and the most recent is a little bit more, but this is on .gov website. So we'll use it. Compliance will like that. So we'll go to the exact age of one, life expectancy 73.55. So then let's go to the age of 73. Well, now all of a sudden, when you go to age of 73, you see on there 11.67. So when you make it to 73, well, now they're like, well, you have another 10 year or 11 years to go. And then let's say, okay, well, let's take 73 and we'll go to 84. And then when you get to 84, they say, guess what? You have another almost 6 years to live. So every year that you make it on that life table that goes by is more like chance that you're going to live even longer. So people see that and it's kind of a morbid table. But if you look at it, you know, and people pass of, you know, there's, it's not even just natural causes, you know, it can be car wrecks, things like that for different things. You know, people pass for different reasons. I think this table is based off 100,000 people. But essentially, every year that you live, the chance of you living longer, if that makes sense, is greater. Like I said, when you start out, you get to 73, then you get to 73, and you go, okay, well, I have 11 more years. And it almost, you know, gets down to this point where it's just, you know, as long as you keep living, you're going to keep living. Even if you think you're going to live like your parents, you know, we have clients that come in here that, you know, they say, well, I'm not going to live much longer. You know, my parents passed away because of such and such at such and such age. And I'm like, well, really, you know, what age was that? And, you know, they're like, oh, well, it was 60 something. And I'm like, okay, well, how old are you? And they're like, well, 75. And I'm like, are you in good health? They're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, you know, according to this chart, you got 10 more years to go. Yeah. You know, so you can't bet on, you know, historical family history anymore because medicine has gotten so much better. And I would say those people that do have that family history get checkups a lot more now. So somebody who has a family history tends to go to the doctor more, which tends, if something's going to happen, they're going to catch it early. So those people may even live longer than people who, you know, haven't had a family history because they're not going to the doctor as much. So you need to make sure that you have a robust plan. Social Security timing is important. Of course, you've paid into that your whole life. And then your retirement income plan, how you're going to draw income from that. You know, you can't just say, well, I'm going to live at 8 until 85. That's the average life. I'm just going to spend everything down by then. Well, then you're going to get 85 and, you know, you'll have to pick up some part-time job, and nobody wants to do that at 85 years old.
Yeah. And if you reach 85 on that table, which we'll drop in the show notes, take a look at it yourself, you still got 5 more years to live, it says. So,
yeah.
And it goes up to 119. And I actually saw something recently. I think I either heard or read this, that there's somebody living right now that's going to live to 140. There's somebody that's already been born that's going to live to 140. So I don't know who that is, who that person is, whether they're already,
that was weird,
40
I thought
or 50
I saw
or whether they're 5 or 6.
Yeah, somebody was following me around the other day. I think that was – I wonder if that was
– So, yeah,
funny you mentioned that, man.
You never know how long you're going to live. All right, let's close it out with one more retirement truth here on this episode of Riverbank Riches with Desmond Taylor. And that's that money that's sitting in cash – is not going to keep up with inflation, right? I mean, we can get excited with some of the interest rates that are out there now, right, on CDs and on some money market accounts, right? It seems great. And even before then, getting a 1% CD was great, you know, 5 years ago, and you felt pretty good about that. But you have to acknowledge that you're going to lose buying power by getting those returns and just leaving your money in cash.
Yeah, even people, you know, especially if you're getting 1 or 2% CD now, you need to, you know, revisit a lot of things. But if you, you know, even people, I think some CDs out there, and you know, I'll come out and say it, that you know they're paying 5% or so, and that we have certain vehicles that are paying even up to, you know, there's some things that we have that are paying 6%, like simple interest. And, you know, I look at these and I go, you know, wow, these seem great. But then you have to look at the risks that are ahead. You look at like the 10-year treasury and it's still under 5%. So that's indicating that, you know, in the future that there's going to be likely a rate, interest rates will decrease. And those people that are in those short-term vehicles are going to be subjugated to, you know, reinvestment risk. And reinvestment risk is something that you don't want to, you know, for now, it's instant gratification. In other words, you're getting that CD and it's instant gratification that you're getting 5.5%. But what are you going to do when rates drop? That's great. You know, I tell people all the time, we can write these CDs, we can write these, you know, different vehicles that have, you know, 1-2 year, six month, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, you know, options. But what are you going to do whenever the interest rates start to drop? So I think there's a better way to take advantage of interest rates right now. One is to be in longer term vehicles, especially if you're going out for retirement. You can do different laddering options. You know, bond laddering is one. You know, you can do different types of laddering with annuities. Some people don't like annuities, but I'm going to go ahead and say that, you know, they're not all bad. It's just how you use them. And some people just misuse them. We don't misuse them here. But those different types of laddering strategies are what you need to think about now. And, you know, laddering strategies are great in low interest rate environment. They're great in high interest rate environment because you get to hold on in high interest rate environments. You get to ladder these bonds out for, you know, 10, 20 years, or these even annuities out for, you know, 10, 12, 15 years. And so you have these high interest rates locked in, or a certain portion of your money of these high interest rates locked in. If interest rates go up, well, we in that ladder, we also build where there's some short maturity dates on those. So if interest rates go up, great, you know, we'll capture some of that. But we have, you know, a secured bucket over here that is the longer duration. You need to capture these, but you need to be careful and you need to strategically capture these high interest rates. You don't just need to go out to the bank because they're offering you 5.5% CD for 6 months and say, you know, hey, don't get me wrong, for money that you need within the next 6 months or money that you need within the next year, this is a great opportunity because you don't just have to leave it in a checking account that's earning nothing. You can go and you can get these short-term strategies. We even have some accounts, like a FICA account we use with a company here that is a 5% rate and it's next day liquidity. So you can use these vehicles and they're great, but you need to be wary of the reinvestment risk that is inevitably going to occur. I was listening to an interview with Jamie Dimon the other day, the CEO of JP Morgan, and he was talking about how there's a couple of existential threats to the U.S. One being the war over there in Europe, and how, you know, there's been 500,000 lives claimed because of that, and what that'll bring. It's putting us in a geopolitical risk, and how it's going to, from our allies and our even our adversaries, and what the outcome will this be with, you know, threats of nuclear war and things like that. But another one is the actual debt that we have within the country. So, you know, I think our debt's, it's north of $31 trillion and all a bunch of that new debt, you know, the bill that they're just trying to cut in Congress now was, I think the average prior to COVID was around $1.3 trillion was what our annual spending was. Now it's like $1.7 trillion. And we have to go out on debt for that. And when you're issuing this debt at 5%, that's not cheap for the government to have to pay back. And who do they pay back? Who do we owe most of our debt to? The U.S. taxpayers, people in our own country. So they have to service this debt, and that debt's incredibly expensive. So, you know, capturing these interest rates now and securing them and locking them for a longer term than just 6 months or a year is important, because inevitably these interest rates will have to go down. Now, they could be held for a year or two. I mean, I'm not disputing that, you know, but don't think that they're going to just be like this forever. People want to reference back in like the 80s when the interest rates were, you know, 15% and stuff. But that's true. We also didn't have $31 trillion of debt, and our spending wasn't nearly $2 trillion a year. So you have to think about that, and you have to think about, how can I position myself to capitalize on these interest rates? I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but it's almost, you know, I've had this conversation, you know, with just a few people. Now I'm putting it out in public, but they're raising these interest rates. And I think that there could be some type of, you know, theory to this, that they're raising these interest rates because the people who know, who maybe have some internal knows, or, you know, some insider knowledge, can capture these interest rates, because the market will be trading flat is what are the projections. The market could be trading flat. You know, you could see S&P returns. I think projections for S&P returns for the next 10 years could be somewhere around 6%. I could be totally wrong on that. So, you know, but that's the projections right now. It's not coming from me, so don't shoot me if they go, you know, below or above that. But for the projections from people who have access to a lot more research and you know, smarts than I do, are projecting the S&P to be around 5 to 6%. Well, interest rates right now are 5 to 6%. So if you can capitalize on some guaranteed rates, or even capitalize on some products that offer higher participation rates in the market, so you could be even be in the stock market, but have, or an index, but be in a higher participation rate that can give you, you know, some higher returns on there with, you know, near chance, no losses, then capitalize on those. Now, don't be in that 6 month CD and think, now, if you need the money, I understand. But if you don't, you know, you need to capitalize. If you're designing an income plan, well, we need to think about how we can design that income plan and how we can take advantage of these rates, because it's not sustainable to be at this interest rate forever.
No question. It'd be interesting to see what happens in the next 5 or 10 years, and something we'll track, and something that you know, Desmond and the team at CLC Financial will work with you on as well. So again, these first five truths: everybody needs an income plan. Everybody needs a plan to address long-term care. Nobody can consistently time the stock market successfully. Nobody knows how long they're going to live. And then finally, that money sitting in cash is not going to keep up with inflation. So this was the first five. We're going to have five more coming up in part two. So please subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast. We'll break down those. We're going to talk some diversification, taxes, estate planning as well. We'll all be a part of that next episode. So it should be a good one. Desmond, for anyone that wants to get in touch with you, obviously clcfinancial.com is the best place to start. What can they expect from that kind of first meeting?
You know, going back to some of the first episodes we did, we start the conversation with just asking you, what does your retirement look like? What, you know, are you going to just stop working? Are you going to dial it back? And we just build it, you know, how much traveling do you want to do? What is retirement to you? And how can we design it to suit you and build an income plan, which is what I think so many people need now, to make sure that you're taken care of for until you pass, not till you're 85, but until you pass.
Start off by going to clcfinancial.com. You can learn more about how they help clients and learn more about their locations as well, but also towards the bottom, you'll be able to fill out a form, get in touch with the team at CLC Financial, and get that process started. But again, these are all things that need to be considered. You might address them differently than someone else in your family, a friend, a neighbor, but bottom line is, these are going to be retirement truths that apply to everyone. So we'll close it out on that note. Desmond, as always, thank you for your time. We will do it again here on Riverbank Riches. Take care.
Securities and advisory services offered through Creative One Securities, LLC member, FINRA, SIPC, and an investment advisor. CLC Financial Services, LLC, and Creative One Securities, LLC are not affiliated. Medical products are not offered by Creative One Securities, LLC. They may be purchased through a licensed insurance professional. Licensed insurance professional, we are an independent financial services firm helping individuals create retirement strategies using a variety of investment and insurance products to custom suit their needs and objectives. This material has been prepared for informational and educational purposes only. It is not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for accounting, legal, tax, or investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Insurance and annuity products are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuing insurance company. We are not affiliated with any government agency.